Klahalia.
Klahalia.
Klahalia, everyone. Welcome, Grandfather. I was thinking about the multitude of stories I've heard Grandfather tell over the years. And I got to thinking that we didn't have them preserved in any way. And stories deserve to be shared and recorded and told forever. So since we have this extra time on our hands right now, in my usual manner of jumping into the river before I learn how to swim, I said to a friend, well, why don't we put these on Zoom and record them for posterity? And of course, here we are doing our second podcast, and I'm still learning how to swim, but it's been fun and I've had a lot of help. But I was thinking that the stories need to be shared with the world. They need to be shared forever. So tonight, we have another story from Grandfather. He's going to surprise us with. And after the lesson, we're going to have a little language lesson again. Grandfather will be teaching me. He'll be teaching you. And then after that, we're going to unmute the mic so that everyone can join in and speak those new words that we learned tonight. But I was thinking about stories. Stories help us understand our place in the world. They help us shape our perspectives of the world. They help us pass down knowledge. That's probably one of the most important things about a story. And stories are universal. Grandfather's telling us stories from a native language, but these stories are universal and can told and probably are told all over the world in different cultures, different languages, different formats. But tonight, I want to welcome Grandfather. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing another story with us. Klahalia. And with that, I turn it over to you, Grandfather.
What a joy to have this opportunity to share some of those stories that are so meaningful to my heart and have been for these years. Tonight, I'm going to tell you a story that it might be titled The Miser of Tacoma. And before I get into the story, it might be wise for me to say a few words about this word, Indian word, Tacoma. It's the actual real name for what you call mountaineer. It's been Tacoma for millennia. It is in the dialect of the Salish language as spoken by the upper Kalats in the Packwood area. The Kalats there speak a K-series dialect of the Salish language. And so Tacoma, if you're going to pronounce that correctly, you do not pronounce it the way you pronounce the city name of Tacoma. If you right now, while you're listening to me, if say to yourself silently, Tacoma, the city, you'll notice that your tongue goes up in the upper palate right behind your teeth, Tacoma, the C up there. But in the Indian language, it's a very deep guttural language. And so it becomes a very deep-throated K sound, way down deep in your throat, Tacoma, Tacoma. But since all of our tribes here in Western Washington spoke different dialects, you'll find that the tribes that lie around the foot of Tacoma, like, for example, the Nisqually, for them, it's Tahoma. It's a softer sound. on there. In fact, today, probably some of you are aware of Tahoma High School in the Nisqually, Tahoma. For another tribe, it's Tacobet. And so it goes, but that's all the same mountain. Mount Rainier being the largest of all the mountains, Mount Baker, Mount St. Helens, Mount Adams, Mount Hood, it was recognized as the chief. He was the big guy, the chief. Some of our legends that I would tell, I told one of them last Tuesday also about Tacoma and Lawilatla, Mount St. Helens and Mount Rainier. Another legend that I'll be telling sometime in the future is about Tacoma had two wives, Lawilatla and Patu, Mount St. Helens and Mount Adams. So enough of the legend on that word, Tacoma. There are a number of legends about Tacoma, so we will hear them in time. This legend, the miser of Tacoma lived up in the Packwood Randall area, and it goes like this. In the long ago time, miser, we lived at the foot of Mount Rainier, Tacoma, and he was a very unhappy man. He had no reason to be unhappy, for he was known very well all over southwestern Washington as the greatest fisherman, the greatest hunter that there was. When all the other people were not getting any food, the fishermen weren't catching salmon, the hunters weren't getting any elk, and many of them were very, very hungry, he could go out and he could catch enough salmon to feed the whole village. The fishermen weren't able to catch any. Moose, that's elk. In the winter, they could be hiding in the deep darkness of the forest, and the hunters couldn't find them. But moose, elk, was miser's totem power, and they would give enough of themselves to him that he could feed the whole village. He was renowned as a great hunter and fisherman. That meant nothing to him. He could care less. All he wanted was the hiaqua. Now you're probably wondering, what in the world is hiaqua? Well, you might call it what the Indians would call the green frog skin. The green frog skin, what's that? That's the white man's dollar bill. The hiaqua was our money that we used. And what is the hiaqua? Well, I brought a necklace to it so I can show it to you. If you can see these white seashells, they're tubular. The string goes right down through the seashell. This is hiaqua. There's only one place in the entire world where you can find hiaqua. That's off the shores of Vancouver Island, right close by. And it was, again, our money. So you string it, this has other beads on it. If you really strung it the old way, there'd be no beads, this be hiaqua. You'll notice these are very small. They're only about an inch long. But some of the hiaqua, you know that by the white man's name, dentilium. But some of it is 2 inches, some 3 inches. It gets sometimes as large as 4 inches. But those large ones were valueless. The only ones that were really counted for money were these little small ones. And they were worth whatever you needed to buy for. And for example, you could be going down the mountain trail and you meet an Indian from another tribe and he's got a beautiful horse. Oh, you love that horse. You might say to him, oh, you sell horse? How much you sell for? And he'd tell you how many strands of hiaqua. Where they would string the hiaqua on strands about 20 inches long. And then they would use that to buy things. What is interesting about the hiaqua, that the Vancouver Island Indians would trade those across onto the mainland here to buy things they wanted. But the Indians here would trade them over the Cascades to the Plateau tribes over in the Yakima area, and they would trade them on over the Rocky Mountains to the Plains tribes. And when Lewis and Clark and their party came traveling this way, they found that out there in the plains, amongst the Blackfeet and many of the other tribes, women would have their whole dresses be loaded with hiaqua, and the men their shirts with hiaqua. It was very valuable and highly desired. So all he wanted was more. He wanted hiaqua. And he kept after his totem power, moose, elk, to tell him where he could find or get more hiaqua. Well, moose, that's the name for elk, finally gave in to him and said, "You'll find it if you go to the very top of Tacoma, Mount Rainier. And you'll find that if you look down in the crater, you'll see a small black lake. And on the far side of that lake, you'll see three giant stones. One of them is shaped like a salmon's head. And the other one is shaped like our vegetable plant. And the other one is shaped like moose, elk. And if you dig down through the ice at the foot of moose rock, you'll find it's filled with hiaqua." Well, he couldn't wait to make the trip. But he knew that if he told his Klutschman, that's his wife, that he was going to go to the top of Tacoma, oh, she would raise all kinds of hell. No way are you going to go up there. No one makes it to the top. They drop into one of the crevices of ice and they are dead. So he knew he didn't dare tell her. So he schemed, okay, this is the time of the year where the camas is being harvested. And he knew that the next morning, early in the morning, she'd be going out to dig camas and she'd be gone all day. Oh, that'll give him a chance to sneak away. So the next morning, he got his ictus. The ictus, that's his carrying bag. It was made out of, he'd make them out of deer hide or elk hide, depending on how big an ictus you needed. He had a big one in it. He put some smoked salmon, and he put some camas, and he put some dried berries and all the things he needed on the trip for food. And then he took two elk horns, and he had taken and broken all the tines off of each one of those two except for one tine. And he was going to use those two for ice picks to help him climb up the snowy slopes of Tacoma. And so he started the trip early. He bound all that, wrapped them all up in that elk hide, his ictus, and with a rope around it, tied it and hung it on his back and started up the trail. He spent all day climbing that mountain. When it got about evening time, he was hungry. He had reached the edge of the snowpack, and he stopped to eat, and then he knew he didn't dare to spend the night sleeping there because he had a long journey ahead and knew he'd have a full moon that night. So he got through eating, he went back to the journey, up onto the ice pack. He climbed all night, all day the next day and the following night. And just at daybreak, he arrived at the top. He looked down into the crater, and he saw that little black lake. And sure enough, just as Moose had said, there were the three giant stones, the one shaped like a camas, the other like a salmon, and the one like Moose, the elk. Oh, he couldn't wait to get across that snowpack down into the crater and over to the Moose Rock. He got to the Moose Rock. He threw his ictus down on the snow. He opened it up. He grabbed an ice pick. He raised it high and was just ready to strike the snowpack when he heard a loud plap on the water of the pond. And he saw this giant, giant otter. An otter that was as big as a human being came out of the water and went and climbed up to the top of the moose rock and sat there. And then he heard 12 small slaps. And he saw, oh, they were regular size otters slapping the water. And they came and they made a great big circle around Miser, the rocks, the moose moss rock and all. He raised his pick again and he came down with a real hard smack on the ice. He kept doing this. After 13 slaps, 13 picks with his pick, he heard this slapping and he looked and it was these 12 small otters that slapped the snow and moved up a foot closer to him. Big otter had slapped the great big stone. And every 13 picks, this would happen. Well, he got tired, decided to stop and rest. Big otter came down off of that big rock and slapped him on the shoulder, and he was frightened that he was going to be hurt. He knew Big Otter was saying, you got to keep picking. So he went back to picking. After those 13 slaps and more picking and more of those, and each time the small otter is getting closer and closer to him, his pick broke. Big Otter, she came down off of the moose rock, and in her mouth, she grabbed the other pick and thrust it into Miser's hands, and she climbed back up on top of the rock. He kept on picking, and now the small otters were getting so close to him, he could almost feel their breath down on the back of his neck, when suddenly he broke through, and there was the Hiaqua, a hole filled with them. Oh, he had brought many short sinews with him, and he started stringing them. He strung one sinew with Hiaqua, put it around his neck, and then he strung another one, and then another one, and then another one, and finally he had all that he could carry. There was still more Hiaqua in that hole. He was excited. He gently covered them up to hide them. And he knew he's going to plan on coming back again, another trip, and get more of them. He turned and started to leave. And as he started to leave, suddenly, Tuta, thunder, roared. And then Kolnas, the storm god, came down on a storm on him and hit him real grievously hard. The little otters, they fled back to the pond. Big Otter did the same. And they seemed to be very angry with him. They were turning that water in the pond up like the big waves. They were just furious the way they were treating it all. Tuta roared. Kolnas came down. He knew they were angry with him for some reason. He got frightened. He took one strand of his Hiaqua and threw it down on the snow. Everything quiet and nice and calm, very briefly. And then Tuta roared even louder, and Kolnas came down even with more vengeance, and he threw another one away. And then it quieted down, and this went on and on until by the time he got to the other side of the crater, he had thrown away every string of Hiaqua that he had. He was up on the edge of the crater and he looked back. The little black lake was still there, very calm, and the three giant stones had disappeared. He fell asleep. He slept for 20 snows, that's 20 winters. And He finally awakened, and he was very, very hungry. He found that when he fell out there, it was all covered with snow and ice, and now there were bare rocks. He went a little further down, and he found the blueberries were ready to pick, and he was hungry, and he ate and had his fill. He continued on down the mountain, and he finally saw an old, old house. He knocked on the door. Oh, it was a little old, ancient old gray-haired woman in there. And she looked at him, and she said, "You've been gone for 20 snows." It was his klutzman. Oh, he couldn't believe he was that old. He went down on the Kalis River near Packwood, and he looked and saw a pool where he could see a reflection of himself, and he saw that he was old and wrinkled and gray-haired. But he was no longer unhappy. He was very content. He didn't care for the Hiaqua anymore. End of story. Now, what's that story telling us? This story being told in the old longhouses for maybe several hundred years. It's a very ancient story. It was a story to teach our children and our youth several very important lessons. One lesson. The Creator brought him in here as a youth, gifted to be a great fisherman and a great hunter. And he didn't care about that at all. He wanted something else in life. And this lesson that teaches us that each of us come into this world with our own gifts and our own talents. And now I'm talking to you. You, listen to this lesson. Be content with who you were intended and meant to be. And if you don't know what that is, then see me privately and I'll give you some instruction on how you can discover who you were meant to be, who you are. He should have been content to be renowned as a great hunter and fisherman, to feed the village when they were hungry, but he wasn't. It reminds me of stories in the Gospels where Jesus called the Pharisees and Sadducees hypocrites. Now, you probably think that word belongs to the church dictionary. No, it has nothing to do with religion. Jesus breathed a scorn into it. It became a church word. But it actually belonged to the drama theater in Greece. A hypocrite was the Greek word for an actor or an actress. You're not being your genuine self. You're acting the part of somebody else. Oh, how many of us get caught in that trap, huh? So this was the legend told in the longhouse to teach our youth. Discover who you're to be. And that's the reason they go on a vision quest at the age of puberty, to find out their vision, to tell them who they are and why they're here and the part that they're to play in their community. Another legend, teaching from that legend, is answering the question, why were Tutankh and Konos so angry with him? Because he had forgotten a teaching that he himself knew, that is, to give thanks. When he was so loaded with the Hiaqua that he turned to leave the Moose Moose Rock, he forgot to leave a gift for Moose Moose, who told him about this. He forgot to leave a gift for Hayas Sakhali Tayi, the great chief of the above, or God, for giving all of this to him. He had forgotten to give, and this is a real important teaching in our Indian world. One of the things that you and I have experienced being raised in the white culture, we were raised in a culture where you're out to try and get as much as you can get, to be a millionaire, a billionaire, or at least to have a nice home, and if you wanted a boat, to have that, to gather, gain, gain, gather, gather. That's a white culture. Is to gain, to get, to receive. But the Indian world, if you were to If you were to ask in the white world, how do you know a person is wealthy? By how much he has accumulated? But in the Indian world, the man who could give away the most was considered the most wealthy. And so great potlatches and giving away things. So this is another lesson that comes out of that legend. The legend is a very important one in telling some of these, giving us some of these lessons. We'll take now and we will go to our language lesson. This is the Chinook jargon. And I might say the word Chinook, that's the way we white people pronounce their tribal name. We pronounce it in all of our books, you'll find will be C-H-I-N-O-O-K, Chinook. But they don't say it that way. They put it like a T-S sound to start with. T-snook, t-snook, t-snook. That's the way they pronounce it. And when I speak of Chinook jargon, I might use sometimes Chinook Wawa. That's Chinook talk. Kahalia Rainbow. Are you there, Rainbow? Oh, she's been cut out, evidently.
Now I'm there.
How's that?
Kahalia.
Kahalia Rainbow. Is this true?
Kahalia.
Nika to keg, Micah.
Close.
Micah, Mamuk, and Nika Tum Tum Kwan.
I make your heart happy.
Are you having a hard time hearing me?
I think you said you make my heart happy.
Yeah, yes, or make my heart warm.
Okay.
Yes, you're right.
All right, I got it.
Yeah, you got it. There's a few words to the rest of you about Rainbow Hurry. That I was beginning to teach this language to, like we're just beginning to teach you. And can you imagine? She went home, and that very week before the next week's lesson, she gathered a bunch of her friends together up there, and she started teaching the first lesson that I gave her, and she's still teaching the language and speaking it quite well. She teaches one group on the Nisqually Reservation, so I thought, well, now here she is, give you a little sample of sharing the language. Let us get back to our new word for the today. I'm going to give you both the word in the singular and in, both words are in the singular, but for the I, me, my, mine, and the you. And so you'll notice when I was talking to Rainbow, I said Nika to keg Micah. Nika means I, me, my, mine. That concept, that is, it is singular, I. Next week, I'll give you the plural, the you, we, us. But tonight, it's just the singular, Nika, Nika. Say it with me, Nika. N-A-I-K-A, Nika, Nika. I won't have you learn the word to keg tonight, but I'm just going to work on Nika and Micah. But the reason I put that in, because when I was talking to Rainbow and I said Nika to cake Micah, I said, I like you. The I, Nika, and the Micah, you. In the singular, if I was talking to you as a person, Tom or Penny, and I said, and I was saying, I like you, I would use the singular Micah, you. But if I was talking to all the whole group that I'm looking at here on the screen, then the you would be plural, and that's the one I'll give you next week. So Nika, can you just say Nika?
Nika.
Now say Micah. Nika. One starts with an N and the other one with the M. Nika, I, me, mine. Micah, you in the singular. So you probably wonder, well, how do you know how to interpret if somebody says to me, Nika, how do I know whether they're saying I, me, my, or mine? Well, if I'm talking about this this book that I have, and I say, Nika, you know, it's, I'm talking about mine. This is mine. It's real easy to do that. You're going to find in this simple language, there aren't very many words, but each word can mean a number of different things, but it's all related, and you know what it is by what you're talking about. So, Nika Tekeg Mika. Say that again. Nika Tekeg Mika. Okay, let's go back and rehearse last week. You remember I introduced you to a word that you have heard me say, and we've all said many times in the church, Klahalia. But take another one that I gave to you last week, Hayas Saghale Tai'i. That is great above chief, literal. In English, you would say the great chief of the above. Or that's our Indian word for God, the great chief of the above. Remember that G in Saghale is like the K in Tacoma. It's deep guttural. Not a G of soft G, but a deep guttural, Saghale. Okay, any questions on tonight's language lesson?
Grandfather, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I've been looking forward to showing off my language from last week. Haye Saghale Tai'i, I believe.
One of the things I might suggest, when I told you about Rainbow, she went back and stirred up a class right away. At least what you might do in your home with your family is start teaching them. Teach them last week's lesson and teach them tonight's lesson. And in time, you'll be able to talk to each other in your home. If it's just you and your mate or you and your children or whatever, you can really enjoy that. You might even have a neighbor that's a close friend you're with quite a bit. Teach them. Because one of the things that I have discovered, and I still have a struggle with myself, even though I speak it well, I have a hard time hearing and understanding what I am hearing. That's because nobody for me to talk to. And somebody that would learn it with me. I learn to talk by talking. We learn to hear by hearing. But you have to have somebody there to talk back to you so you can learn to hear the words.
So, well, Grandfather, I want to thank you so much for this lesson tonight before we turn it over for conversation.
I appreciate
the time you're taking to share this with us. It means a lot to all of us.
Yeah.
And with that, let's open it up for conversation and questions.
And if you have any questions you'd like to ask me about anything that I've said tonight, any comments?
My favorite character was Moose Moose.
Thanks for sharing the story with us, Grandfather.
Yes,
thank you very much.
Yeah, Grandfather, we appreciate you so much taking the time to share with us. This will be the first of a multitude of stories that we will do every Tuesday and every Thursday until we run out of stories. Oh dear, did I say that? I don't think we'll ever run out of stories.
No, we won't.
But thank you everyone for joining us tonight. It has been just a pleasure to see you and to talk to you. With that, I believe we're gonna turn off the recording and just have time for visiting and conversation.
And see you
Klahalia.
Klahalia.
Thank you, Penny. Thank you, Grandfather. Thanks.